Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the June 27 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I am Todd Gleason. This is Commodity Week. Monday, the United States Department of Agriculture at 11 o'clock Central Time will release the acreage and grain stocks numbers. We'll talk about those today with our special guest a bit later in the program, Michael Cordonnier of Soybean and Corn Advisor out of Hinsdale, Illinois. Our panelists today include Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri Marketing out of Morton, Illinois, and Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas. Remember, you can always find Commodity Week on our website at willag.org. Pete Manhart is unavailable today. Let's start our questioning with this discussion point. On Monday, of course, the United States Department of Agriculture will release the acreage and the grain stocks numbers. I'd like to get an estimate from each of you, including Dr. Cordonnier, on what those numbers might look like. And we'll start maybe with Mike Zuzolo and then Chip and then Michael Cordonnier.
Todd, the survey was done the first 2 weeks of June, so that may have a role in what the trade is maybe expecting versus what the March intentions were. But having said that, I think the trade is lined up with the newswire estimates as at least getting the same number of corn acres of 91.7 as they got back in the March estimates. And that's, I think, the low end of the figure based upon some of the trade guesses, because it seems like that there's quite a few of the analysts, of about 25 analysts, that we were up above 91.5 and heading towards 92. So I think 91.7 is probably at least factored in at this point. For the beans, it's a lot harder to say that the trade isn't kind of on one side of the boat. In other words, 21 of the 25 analysts had 81.5 million or more. And that was the March number, 81.5 million or more as a trade guess. So essentially 85% of the survey estimates were at March's number or greater. So the trade's kind of going in with not much change in corn, but quite a big potential big change to the upside in the beans.
And Chip?
Well, I would agree with Mike the way those average estimates are out, but there is a wide variance of opinions on those, you know, from the low end of 91 million all the way up to 92.2 on the corn, even wider variance on the beans. So I think we're set up for a potential shock. The market, to me, on Friday, seemed like we're starting to maybe get the market worried about, you know, a bigger bean acreage number and maybe a touch smaller corn acreage number, just, you know, based on market action. But I think both the stocks and the acreage, you know, this year, more than many in the past, is set up for the potential for some huge volatility and some huge surprises just because of the big variance of opinions on all these different estimates and reports.
And Dr. Cordonnier.
Yes, I had been expecting about an equal amount of corn compared to March, and now I might be a little bit below the March number by a little bit. For soybeans, I had been expecting a million to maybe a million and a half more than March. Now I'm not quite as confident about the million and a half more, but I think the bean number will be a little bit up compared to March.
All right. So when you look at these numbers on Monday, as they compare to what might come out, you put them into your calculators, into your S&D figures, what do you see, Dr. Cordonnier, for the coming year for the supply and demand figures?
Well, I have my corn yield right now at 165 bushels per acre. So if we come up with an even number of acres and get 165 bushels, that gives us about a 13.9 billion crop. And I don't do too much on the demand side, but I think that would give us certainly a comfortable corn supply. Now, for soybeans, I'm using 45 bushels per acre, and I have been using 1 million more than March. So if you use that 1 million more and 45 bushels per acre, it gives me a 3.66 billion crop for the soybeans. Now, the old crop soybeans, of course, are going to get very tight here before the new crop coming in, but it's going to give us a little bit of a respite here for the next crop. And depending on what the price action does in the market, of course, will have a big influence on what they do down in South America as far as soybean acres next year.
Chip, do you have a question for Dr. Cordoniere this morning or this afternoon?
Well, I think it would relate to just what he said. Is it too early, doctor, to get a feel for South American intentions on acreage, or that will they really key on just where we end up here with the size of our crop and then where prices are when they go to the fields in February and March?
Well, it will be prices, of course. At the current level, I would say a Brazilian soybean area might go up 3 to 5%. Now, remember, Brazilians watch the May futures for soybeans, and as long as the May future stays between like 1150 and 1250, I think they will continue to expand their soybean acreage. For corn, though, I'm not as confident for the corn. They look for corn, look for the July futures. And I think if we go below, say, 425, 450, I would say the corn area in Brazil would stay even at best. If we get it above, say, 450 a bushel for next July, then I think they might expand their corn a little bit. Remember now, they cut way back on their corn acreage in Brazil this past year. So they went from an 81 million ton production 2 years ago down to probably about a 76 million ton production this year.
And Mike, do you have a question for Dr. Cordoniere too?
Yeah, kind of a two-parter here, Doctor. If the new crop corn, in your opinion, do you think you could get an ending stocks figure upwards of 2 billion bushels given a current weather pattern all the way through to harvest? And also, given that we went down to 435 this week in December corn, do you think we've already tried to price in close to 2 billion bushel carryover in the futures market?
Well, I think it's easier to answer the second question first. I think, yes, we probably have priced in a very big corn crop. Now, the second question, how much of a carrier can we get, depends on the production, of course. I have 165 bushel yield right now. My maximum is 170. I'm a little bit less confident of a 170 today than it was maybe 2 weeks ago because of some of the problems out in the Western Corn Belt. And it might take off a little bit of the top end. I would give that 170 possibility maybe a 5 or 10% possibility. Now, on the other side of the equation, I think we have raised the lower end of the corn. I just don't see much bad corn out there at all. You know, if you get past the ponded areas and the flooded areas and the river bottoms and that sort of thing, the corn looks pretty darn good. We're already at the end of June. The first half of July looks very favorable. As far as temperature and moisture goes, I don't see any problem with the pollination. So I have a neutral bias right now for my corn estimate. So I might go a little bit higher, might go a little bit lower. I think we're on track for a pretty darn good corn crop.
I'd like to turn that question around and ask the same question, Mike, of both you and Chip, and maybe we'll start, Mike, with you. Do you think the 435 was built on a 2 billion bushel carryout?
Yeah, I do. I think that since we hit that back in January, that's kind of what the trade was trading, Todd. I kind of feel as though, and I agree wholeheartedly with Dr. Cordoniere about the low end of the crop coming up, but I also feel as though the wheat has been responsible for about 50 cents of price erosion in the corn. And so I kind of still feel like that the old crop corn needs to go back up some, and that a wheat low, a cycle low in the wheat would help a lot. So I do feel like $4 cash new crop corn, which is essentially 435 futures, would catch a lot of the bearishness at this point.
Chip, are you that confident too?
Yeah, I agree. I think 2 billion is not a shock to the market and pretty well factored in. I think the two things, though, and this may sound like an obvious statement, are going to be what's the ultimate size of the crop and then how well our demand holds up into this new crop. So those are the real, and I think that demand equation is the missing link there. So, you know, demand has been very, very good. Ethanol margins have been good. Our exports have tailed off a little bit. But I think that's the key. Can we hold this strong demand base? And, you know, ultimately, if we're up near that 170 type of a number that we talked about earlier as maybe a potential max for this corn crop. We'll probably end up ultimately above 2 billion bushel carryout. I don't think that's priced in yet, but I think the market, in the case of corn, has done a much better job factoring in the potential for this new crop than the bean market has.
Maybe each of you, and let's divide these up one sector at a time, can take up one sector. So maybe we can have Dr. Cordonnier take up the export or demand side for corn in the coming year. We can have Chip, maybe if you can take up the quarterly hogs and pigs report in the livestock sector side. And why don't we start, Mike, with you on ethanol. The EIA, of course, told us a couple of weeks ago we had our best week ever since 2011. Do you think there is much demand that's coming out of the ethanol production side of the marketplace, and can it help out?
Yeah, I really think there is, especially if the Iraqi situation gets worse. I mean, there's a pressure point. There's a price point where the unleaded gasoline at the pump, if we would shoot to 425 or 450, that would be very negative for ethanol. But if we saw a gradual increase in prices because of what's happening in the Middle East right now, Todd, again, given that we're darn near 50 cents a gallon of profitability for ethanol blenders and crushers at this stage, I don't see much weakness in the demand side of the ethanol unless, again, we have a gas spike like we did back in the 70s.
And how about for the livestock sector?
Livestock side, this quarterly hogs and pigs report released this afternoon looks to be, at first glance, fairly friendly. A lot of these categories were under the lowest estimate. I think from the feed side, that's always the biggest wild card on corn demand. I think we are slowly but surely building the cattle herd up and retaining heifers back. That's going to be a slow process, but we're on the right track there. But we still have a big hole here in the next several months as far as pigs go on this hogs and pigs report. That's going to be friendly to hogs come next week, and maybe not quite as friendly from as bullish from a corn feeding perspective either.
Dr. Cordonnier, you want to take up demand and the export market for corn in the coming year?
Well, those animal numbers, of course, are slowly building. I'd like to see them grow a little bit faster, but you're limited in that sense. So I think the corn demand is slowly increasing, but as we always say, low prices cure low prices. So if we stay in this, 450 or below, it would start to drive up some demand for that corn. For soybeans, of course, we're going to be very tight getting to the new crop. We're going to bridge the gap with some imports from Brazil. But going forwards, I think the demand stays very strong from China. And I think the soybean demand is going to stay strong, although we are going to probably build some stocks, of course, with this big soybean acreage, and if we get a good yield this year.
Hey, are all of you feeling fairly friendly to the soybean market? Am I gathering that right? I'm pretty sure I've got that correct for you, Dr. Cordonnier. How about the other two? Chip?
I'm not as friendly, just because of the potential to build those stocks. And I'm not so sure we're not a little bit skewed to the top side on what our demand expectations are. Obviously, the demand the last couple of years on beans have just been phenomenal. Now we've had a better crop out of Brazil and Argentina. If we have a big crop this year, I think we could be a little bit overstated on demand, which is going to add to the carryout. It all depends on crop size. If we have a 45-bushel crop like we talked about earlier, I think the stocks are just going to be too big to support 12.25 November 14 soybean futures.
And Mike Zuzulo.
Yeah, Chip's point is well taken about China, and if their economy can continue to grow at the pace it needs to continue to suck up, 40 to 60% of the world's beans. But I do feel like, Todd, that the meal rally potential is not over in the short term. There's still some unanswered questions about the old crop demand, and I'd be interested in what Dr. Cordonnier and Chip have heard. I have heard a lot from Kansas all the way to Ohio. As of Monday's crop conditions report, many producers calling in saying, I don't have the best beans I've ever had, like the crop conditions are telling me that. Maybe in a month I will, but right now I would say it's no better than average and maybe even below average. So I think there might be an issue down the path here if we don't have ideal weather. Beans could come back around and really push a rally into the market that maybe we aren't expecting right now.
I expect a divergence in opinion on this one, but Chip, what are your guys telling you?
I would agree with Mike, kind of a mixed bag, but I'd also say we're off to a little bit of a slow start, and it may not be the best time on the calendar to gauge that. You know, beans are hard to gauge anyway, so you know, sometimes the best-looking, nicest, luscious green beans don't yield, and the short, scraggly ones surprise us with huge yields. So I think we need to get about 4 or 5 weeks down the road and get a better feel for that. But, I mean, I don't disagree with Mike. We need a big crop, and if there is a crop scare or a crop problem down the road, you know, obviously we could go quite a bit higher in these beans. But I think it's a little bit early to tell as far as crop conditions go, and we just need a little more time on the calendar here and a little further, you know, vegetative growth before we can tell for sure.
And Dr. Gordonier, I know you sometimes get out and do the muddy foot thing. Other times you're talking to folks. What do you hear about the soybean crop?
Well, I would agree with the prior comments. I think the corn is doing very well. It has survived this sort of a late start better than the beans. I was out in the Western Corn Belt last weekend, and I was not impressed at all with the soybeans. A lot of them were very short, slow-growing, poor color. I think it was a combination of saturated soils and a couple of weeks of cooler weather earlier in June. But as commented before, you just don't know much about soybeans during June. And also, I don't know how you judge a very poor, good, or excellent soybean when it's 3 inches tall. So I think the jury is still out on the soybeans, although I think the soybeans have a much harder row to hoe here than the corn. A lot of the corn look really good. But the soybeans are just yet to be determined.
Inside the corn market, because it looks so good, do we have concerns about both the hard red and the soft red winter wheat, the vomitoxin or DON, which is the same thing, being a problem and creating a larger supply of feed wheat than expected? And I don't know, Chip, why don't you take that one up for me?
Yeah, I'm picking up quite a problem, obviously, over the last couple of weeks. And I think that could end up being a problem. I think it's already, you know, from a basis standpoint, affected us to some extent. So that could hang over us a little bit. In the same breath, that might make some of the better quality and you know, higher protein content wheat that much more valuable. So it's probably more of a spread vehicle right now and something that will be seen through the basis levels. But it certainly could be, you know, hanging over the corn market here from a competitive feed grain standpoint. Before it's said and done.
And Mike Zuzulo?
Yeah, I mean, the CIF basis jumped up to, I think, around 75 cents for the spot barges on Thursday, Todd, and that was the highest in a couple months. And I'm like Chip, I think this really could be a situation where if you didn't get too much rain and you sprayed fungicide a couple, three times, like a lot of clients I'm talking to have, they may have a really nice price potential and would not be over-eager to sell too early some of the good quality wheat here, depending on how bad of a problem it is. I'm hopeful that this is only 10, 15, 20% of the crop. It's the first part of the crop that comes off because the crop that didn't get sprayed with fungicide would be ready faster and dried down faster. So I'm hoping this fusarium goes away as we get into the harvest here in the next couple weeks. If I still hear about it around July 4th, I'm going to start becoming more concerned about wheat going into the corn feed channel.
You, of course, are listening to Commodity Week. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment. Just a reminder that on Monday, USDA will release the acreage and grain stocks numbers. We will have those up on our website at willag.org at 11 o'clock Central Time. The numbers, again, come out during the trading hour on Monday. The acreage and grain stocks figure from USDA. Visit us online at willag.org or follow us on Twitter at Commodity Week. They will be posted in both places. Agricultural programming comes to you from Illinois Public Media on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Up next, Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, with a look at the agricultural weather forecast.
The statewide average temperature for June so far is 72.4 degrees. That's 0.8 degrees above average. The statewide average rainfall is 6.1 inches, which is 1.9 inches above the long-term average of 4.2 inches. Amounts of 5 to 10 inches were common across the state. Both Dixon and Galena have reported just over 10 inches of rain so far. According to the USGS, rivers and streams in Illinois are in better shape than a month or two ago. Most gauges are near to above normal. There is minor flooding on the Illinois River and minor to moderate flooding on the Mississippi River between Dubuque down to St. Louis. The National Weather Service forecast for this weekend and next week shows a continuation of the warm, humid, and rainy conditions. Highs on Saturday through Tuesday will be in the 80s. On Wednesday and Thursday, highs will be in the 70s in the northern Illinois and in the 80s in central and southern Illinois. Nighttime lows will be in the upper 60s and low 70s this week. There is a chance of rain on Saturday through Tuesday with potential rainfall totals of 1 to 3 inches. While the 4th of July is still several days away, next Friday looks to be cool and dry in the morning with heat and humidity moving in by the afternoon with a chance of rain, especially in western and northern Illinois. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Our thanks to Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey Prairie Research Institute for his update of the agricultural weather forecast. Here are the way the numbers settled in Chicago at the CME Group and the weekly changes. July corn this week had a high of $4.57¾, the low over the week at $4.39½. A settlement price at $4.43 on Friday afternoon was down 10¼ cents from the previous Friday's close. December corn at $4.47¼, the new crop down 4¾ cents for the week. In the soybean pit, July beans at $14.40¾ cents for the high, the low at $14.04½. Settlement price again up 16¼ cents at $14.32 for the July soybeans. No crop November, $12.28, finished 3½ cents lower. July soybean meal at $469.80, up $10.60 on the week. July bean oil at $39.98, finished 15 cents lower. July soft red winter wheat at $5.85¼, unchanged on the week, and the weekly change for the hard bread was up 5¼ cents in the lead option July at $7.26. Live cattle from the CME group finished at 151.12½, up $4.80 from the previous Friday. August feeder cattle at 214.32½, up $7.45, and lean hogs at $129.82½. Settled 67½ cents higher than the previous week. That all from the CME Group in Chicago.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
This is Illinois Public Media. This is the June 27 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Chip Nellinger, Blue Reef Agri Marketing, and Mike Zuzolo, Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. Our special guest, Dr. Michael Cordonnier. He's a soybean and corn advisor out of Hinsdale, Illinois. Dr. Cordonnier, why don't you take some time and explain your worldview of commodities at this point on the global front outside of the United States and the Northern Hemisphere and what they might look like?
Well, of course, in South America, they're watching these markets very closely. Corn prices, for example, in domestic corn prices in Brazil are quite low, down about $3 a bushel. In the state of Mato Grosso, which is the biggest corn-producing state in Brazil, they have an excess supply of corn and high transportation costs. So they already are petitioning the federal government in Brazil to come in and buy corn at a subsidized rate, pay for the transportation, at least part of the transportation, to get this to livestock users or end users. So I think that's going to weigh on the corn production in Brazil, and Brazil is now the third largest corn producer in the world. In Argentina, they have a lot of economic problems, and I still think the soybean area in Argentina might go up a little bit this coming year. Corn, I think it's going to hold flat. But, you know, President Kirchner has some problems with hedge funds in New York that have to pay off old debts and that sort of thing. She has been sort of badgering the farmers to sell their soybeans that they've just now finished harvesting at a faster pace. They're very slow sellers. I would say today they've sold maybe 40%, and they're going to continue to be slow sellers. So we're not going to get a big rush of soybeans out of Argentina because the farmers there look at their soybeans as a hedge against inflation, which is running about 30%, and a hedge against future devaluations of the Argentine peso, which they're very worried about. So there's a lot of economic problems in Argentina that's kind of holding them back.
Chip, do you have a question for Dr. Cordonier?
Well, I think just kind of as a follow-on to that, what will make them, the Argentine farmer, sell beans? Is there one specific economic occurrence, or what's going to make them sell that big chunk of beans, or will they potentially be a holder of that for another 12 to 18 months? Do you have an opinion there?
They might be a holder, although they still got a little bit of beans left over from last year, so you can't hold things forever. I think if there was a devaluation of the peso, then right after the devaluation, then I think they would go ahead and sell. Now, you can't hold on for all the stuff forever. They will need to ramp up their sales here before the next planting season starts in September and October, but I don't see anything on the near-term horizon that's going to make them sort of accelerate the sales. I think they remain very slow sellers. You want grain in the bin. You don't want pesos in the bank. Now, the government may do something stupid and try to force them to sell. I don't think that's going to happen, but you just never quite know about Argentina.
Let's take time now to give each of you an opportunity for a final word. We'll start with you, Mike Zuzulo.
Well, I think the big thing after the report, other than the micro fundamentals that we've been talking about, Todd, I think the big thing will be, since we're at the end of the second quarter, do we see rotation out of equities because we've seen the 10-year inflationary tips start to jump, and we've seen some inflationary data this past week put out. It's the highest since October 2012. We may actually start to see, I think, some rotation into the grains because some of the other commodities have already seen some. So I'll be watching for that as we get into the third quarter.
Chip Nellinger?
Yep, I would agree with Mike. The dollar has been strong recently. It looks like it's weakening up. So I think we can still rally, but from a producer standpoint, we still have to be mindful that, if we're pleased to be in an area that's getting good rain and good yield potential, our break-evens have come down likely from what we used for average yields earlier this winter and spring. So there's still time to make sales and not too late to lock in profits on rallies.
Find us online at willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G. O-R-G.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.